Some of us have been to Vrindavan, some have not. This song takes us to Vrindavan. So if you've been to Vrindavan, it's very easily to meditate on. Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari, and the Radha Madhava doing their pastimes in the groves of Vrindavan. Gopi Janabalava, very dear to the gopis. Of course, the leelas, the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are all centered around the gopis. Gopi Janabalava, Girid Bhadadai. It's people, you know, they see this picture of Radha and Krishna and they say, who is that girl next to? Thank you. Who is that girl next to Krishna? And we say, oh, that's his girlfriend. God has a girlfriend. And, you know, of course, that doesn't fit in people's minds, but we say, well, you can have a girlfriend, but God can't. Anyway, that's Gopi Janabalava, Giri Bhadadari. Giri Bhadadari means the best mountain. He Dari, he lifted the best mountain. Jashoda Anandana, giving pleasure to Jashoda. Braja Jana Ranjana, delighting all the residents of Vrindavan. Jamuna Tira Vanachari, and he plays along the banks of the Jamuna. So what does God do? God plays. And what do? We work. And if you go back to him, then you will not have to work, then you can also play all the time. And some people say, well, that sounds boring. You're always playing. You'd get tired of it. Well, it's not exactly like playing here. It's different play. But my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, said that in the material world, your work is your punishment. And sometimes we don't see it that way, sometimes we do. But he said, you don't realize your work is your punishment. And in the spiritual world, there's no work. So before I became a devotee, I was a hippie. And when I heard it said, in the spiritual world, there's no work, I said, where do I sign? Because that was like the perfection, you know, don't have to work. So obviously, if we're going to go to the spiritual world, heaven, paradise, and there's work, then what's the difference between going there and staying here? Anyway, we can try to enter Vrindavan through this song. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Janabalava Giridharadhari, Gopi Janabalava, Gopi Janabalava Giribharadhari, Gopichana Balaba Giribharadhari, Yashodhanandana Bhajajanadan Jana, Yashodhanandana Vajajanaranjana. Jana Shamana Tira Bana Chari. Shamana Tira Bana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jayampi Janabalava Girivara Dhari. Gopi Janabalava Girivara Dhari. Yashodha Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Shodha Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Bacha Radama Hava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Shri Radha Madhava ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gopremanandi. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi. Mukam karoti vachalam pangulangayate girim yakrupata mahambande siguru dinatharinam. By the mercy of the spiritual master, even a lame man, a dumb man can speak poetry, and a lame man can cross, can climb mountains. Pancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. I offer my obeisances unto all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord who are like desire trees and can fulfill the desires of everyone and are full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shaddaita Gadadhar Shibashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. So I found out at 8 minutes to five that I was scheduled to give class. I was in the middle of prasadam and I gulped it down and jumped into my Super Prabhu outfit, and here I am. So I'm just kind of thinking, you know, what to talk about. When we said this word compassion in this prayer, it reminded me of several stories. I don't know if you're aware of stories about Srila Prabhupada's compassion. And one time Prabhupada was eating, and there were ants on his plate because he was eating a sweet and there was sugar syrup. And so his assistant wanted to rid the ants of his off his plate, and he said, no, they don't eat much, just let them stay. So the vision of a pure devotee of the Lord, a pure devotee of Krishna, is that they have compassion for all living entities, not just human beings, but all living entities. There was another time, I was also an ant, and Prabhupada was looking at the ant, and he said something to his assistant like, this ant looks hungry and weak. Put him on a flower, let him eat the flower. So Prabhupada was thinking about an ant, if an ant was getting enough to eat. It's kind of amazing, isn't it? I have a question for you. When was the last time you were worried about how much an ant in your backyard is eating? But somehow or other, Prabhupada had that consciousness. There is another story. When Prabhupada was staying in England, at that time they were staying at the estate of John Lennon. And I believe it was when they were leaving, or it could have been on a regular basis, they would go up to the trees and they would chant the Maha Mantra. They would chant Hare Krishna to the trees, to benefit the trees. There is a devotee that I know who has a route where he takes Maha water and he has trees and he keeps track of the trees and he goes and gives them water. Every day, every other day, he's got a whole, I don't know how many trees, 500, 1,000, some. His mood is very compassionate towards the trees. Anyway, the definition of compassion, according to our scriptures, is that you cannot tolerate the suffering of another person. And so that means you actually feel another suffer when when you see somebody suffering, you feel it. And because you cannot tolerate that, you want to do something to relieve their suffering. Now, if we look at Srila Prabhupada's life, our spiritual master's life, those of us who were fortunate enough to be present when he was here, we know that he pushed himself to the extreme. He pushed himself more than he should have, more than what was healthy, more than he pushed himself more, so much that you could say he lived on the edge a little bit. And so someone might say, well, he pushed himself because he had a mission given to him by his teacher, his spiritual master. But that's true. But if you look at how much Prabhupada pushed himself, you can see the underlying concern was that people are suffering and I want to eliminate their suffering. So there's a story you may have heard, maybe I've told. Prabhupada was in Mexico and they were all day out doing programs, and they came back in the evening and they just got news that there was going to be a TV show and they could get on the TV show. And that was the most popular TV show at that time. So we're talking like 10, 20 million people watching it. And the show was going to air something like 10 o'clock at night. So it meant that Prabhupada would have to leave. As soon as they got the message, he was going to have to leave. Couldn't have dinner. They were going to get back very late. It wasn't so close, maybe an hour away. And so the devotee said something to the effect that, you know, Prabhupada, this is like going to inconvenience you. And Prabhupada said, if I cared about my convenience, then I wouldn't be able to spread this movement. But Prabhupada, you won't be able to eat now, and you'll come back late, and, you know, we're going to get back late, and we won't get enough rest. And Prabhupada said, we can eat later, we can sleep later. 20 million people are going to hear about Krishna. We must do this. And there are other conversations in which Prabhupada also indicated the same thing, that Prabhupada said, if I cared about my convenience, then I would not be able to do what I did. So we could see that he was very much motivated to see how people in the material world were suffering. And he was very happy to see that when people took to Krishna consciousness, it would make them happy. Anytime someone told Srila Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada would ask often he would ask people, do you like this Krishna consciousness? And when they said, yes, I'm very happy, Prabhupada loved to hear that because that was his mission, to make people happy. Yes, Prabhupada, I love this. I was very miserable before I took to Krishna consciousness, before I began chanting. I was very unhappy. I was very depressed. I was doing this and that, addicted to drugs, addicted to this. Now I'm very happy. That made Prabhupada's day. That's what he came for. His happiness was to see other people happy. And if someone told him, yes, I'm very happy, just smile. He's just so gratified. And then, one of his purports in the book, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, if you turn around up there, that's the book. In one of his purports in the book, he said the fundamental, the fundamental nature of a spiritual person is compassion. And compassion is a very high thing. You know, I mean, you can throw the word around, but it's a very high thing. There's a story of a devotee, and his desire was that all the sin of the world, all the karma, all the bad karma of the world would come to him. He would take it, he would suffer that, and then everyone in this world would be free of their sins and they would go back to Krishna, go back to God. He desired that. And now we hear that and we think, okay, so I have a story for you. Maybe I can take you beyond. Okay, that's amazing. I'll try to take you beyond that. So many of you know I was in the hospital in September, and I had an operation, but there were complications. So it was, complications made it complicated. So the recovery was complicated. And it was very austere. And for weeks and weeks and weeks, it was very austere. I could hardly drink, hardly speak, hardly eat, and hardly sleep. It was just... And in that period when I was going through that, or any of you who've gone through something similar, you know, you get to a certain point where it's like, okay, that's it, I can't take anymore. It's like I've had enough austerity, enough discomfort, enough suffering. So this was the first time in my life when I hit a point where I just said, I can't tolerate anymore. I can't, if I used to take a drink, well, I'd still take a drink. It's ginger juice and turmeric juice. And it doesn't taste good, but it's good for you. As Prabhupada said, if it doesn't taste good, it's good for you. So this is an Ayurvedic doctor recommends this. So before this operation, I was taking it at least for a year or maybe more. And it's pretty nasty, but it's tolerable. After the operation, I had no tolerance for discomfort because I was so uncomfortable. When I took that drink, I couldn't take it. I was like, I can't take this. If it was too cold or too hot, I couldn't take it. I couldn't tolerate anything. I hit a point of that's it. And then I thought of Vasudev Dutta, who said, I will take the suffering of the world on his head. And at that point, I realized, I have no idea what this is like, but I could never do that. You know, before that operation, I might have thought, yeah, let's give it a try. You know, and it's a nice sentiment, you know, maybe Krishna wants me to do it. But in that situation where I couldn't tolerate any more suffering, what to speak of the suffering? I was just taking my own karma. That was bad enough. What to speak of the whole world? And he's feeling so much pain for people suffering that he's willing to suffer for them. Hare Krishna. That's compassion. Srila Prabhupada often gave the example of Jesus Christ as an example of tolerance and compassion because he did the same thing. One time, Prabhupada was asked, do you accept karma when you accept disciples? And Prabhupada's answer was, I don't think he said yes, he just said, therefore Shastra says one should not accept too many disciples. And then Prabhupada said, but we are prepared to go to hell for Krishna. Wow. Another time, when Prabhupada was ill in Vrindavan, there was some yogi or mystic or something, and he could understand that the murti or the deity of Prabhupada that was sitting on the altar, Prabhupada was absorbing karma of the people coming to the temple through that deity and that man. At least that's what he perceived. And he said to Prabhupada, you should take that off the altar because you're absorbing karma. And he said, yes, I know. He didn't say take it off. He said, yes, I know. Hare Krishna. So, if you hear about the sacrifice that the disciples of Srila Prabhupada made, or if you were one of them and made them, you know why you made them. It's because he was making it. And people look at us and say, how did you do that? And our answer is because he was doing it much more than we were doing it. And so it was natural. This is the movement of compassion. And Prabhupada was asked, he said, but what if we don't have any compassion? Because it's, you know, it's a deep thing. And Prabhupada said, serve the movement of compassion. Maybe I'm not compassionate, but I can do compassionate acts. I can follow in his footsteps in some way by trying to represent what he wants. And so we made so many sacrifices, even to the point, I think for some devotees, where the austerity, the suffering they went through became a pleasure because it became a service. It became an act of compassion. And the more sacrifice I made, the more I could experience the compassion that I'm supposed to give and the compassion that Prabhupada had. And we were able to do it. We were able to manifest it far, far beyond our level of realization and far, far beyond our level of compassion, because that's what Prabhupada did and that's what he wanted us to do. I don't know if you know this, but it's quite amazing. Maybe some of you know this, but it's amazing to meditate on this. Srila Prabhupada came to America in 1965. Not much happened until around, let's say, middle of 66. And in 1967, when the average member of ISKCON was probably 19, 18, 19, 20, and the average member of ISKCON had been part of this organization maximum 2 years, average maybe 8 months, 6 months. At that time, Prabhupada said, I may not live long, but you will all have to become spiritual masters. So he's saying this to, you know, like 18-year-olds who have been in the temple for 6 months. So you could see Prabhupada was transferring this mood. Like, I'm going to become a guru. I'm going to take people's karma. I'm going to be bothered by people's problems. I'm going to, you know, have to be so concerned about people's spiritual life. That was Prabhupada's mood. He was transferring that to us. And now, if we say today, you'll all have to be a guru, everyone will be like, yeah, right. Isn't it? Was that your immediate reaction? Like, if you were there in 1960s, like, what's he talking about? This is like, doesn't make any sense. Prabhupada said, my spiritual master is whipping me and I am whipping you. So whatever I'm figuratively, but whipping with a, like you could say, a lotus flower or something. But whatever I'm inheriting, whatever he's giving me, he's asking me to do, I'm giving to you and asking you to do the same thing. So that mood of compassion. Try to help people. Undergo a little inconvenience, make a little sacrifice, try to help people. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm asking you to do. So that was very prominent. Serve the movement of compassion, and then you're compassionate. Hare Krishna. There's another realization I had when I was in the hospital. I had a problem. I had some fluid around my lungs, so they had to stick some tubes through my back to drain that. And when they did that, I had full realization that I was this body, because it hurt like it was very. You can imagine if you have tubes in your back, like going in your back, draining fluid in your lungs. It was very, very painful. And I was thinking about Srila Prabhupada and his last days and the suffering he was going through. And he was still translating, as we know. Incredible. So I was sitting there with these tubes in my back for like 8 hours. And my wife said, Don't take any pain relievers because they make you like crazy. You know? I was way more crazy without them, I can tell you for sure. And they don't give you enough to make you crazy. So I held out all day and then I couldn't sleep, so I had to take them. But I was thinking of Prabhupada, and so I was thinking, okay, I will go in, this is, you know, like on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your pain? 108. You know, like that. You know, like that. You ever been? I hope you never go there, but it's like something like that. You know? And so I thought, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to transcend my body. I'm going to go into I'm not this body meditation. And the more I went into I'm not this body meditation, the more I was meditating on the pain in my back. Like, I couldn't, my consciousness was in my back. You know, when you have pain, that's where your consciousness is. And I couldn't take my mind off that. And I thought, okay, just like Vasudeva Dutta, I got that realization. Now I got this realization that realizing you're not the body, tolerating pain, it actually means you fully realize you're not the body and you detach from it. And I couldn't do that. I tried, but I didn't know how to do it. And I was appreciating so much of Prabhupada's position that he could do that. And then what to speak of, even at the end in that position, he's still translating his books. He's still, that compassion is coming out. Because most of us would just kind of like want to be, try to be comfortable, right? That's all we try to be doing, basically. And so I'm in this position in pain, and I'm sure Prabhupada was in that position, but somehow or other, similar position, he could transcend it. And what's he thinking about? People need to be enlightened with knowledge. And this is my job, and I will do it to my last breath. You probably know that story. Well, many of you know that story. Probably some of you were there in New York. When Prabhupada was not feeling that well, And he said, Prabhupada, why don't you go to Gita Nagari and rest, take it easy. But very difficult to get him to take it easy. He didn't like taking it easy. And, you know, devotees were concerned. He's older, his health is not good. And Prabhupada said, I want the privilege of fighting for Krishna until my last breath. Like, I want to die on the battlefield. And that's basically what Prabhupada did. He was translating Srimad Bhagavatam in his last days. Basically, that's what he did, died on the battlefield. That's what he wanted to do. That's the example he set before us. So, according to me, my realization is, it's Prabhupada's compassion that pushed him. He couldn't stop. He couldn't retire. He wanted to retire. So many times he said, I want to retire. Manage this movement. Just let me translate books. How many times did he say that? He said it many. And how many times did he do it? Zero. He couldn't find a situation where he could just do that because there was so much to do to spread this movement and so much of a need for him personally that even though it was his desire, he couldn't retire. So I feel it's his compassion that made it impossible for him to stop. And so I just picked up on that word, compassion. Then I was thinking, there's a story. Maybe you know this story. Very interesting. One of Prabhupada's female disciples left her husband, probably 1967, left her husband and went with another man. So now she's living with her boyfriend. Her husband comes and tells Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada writes her and says, you know, come back, go back with your husband. But she writes Prabhupada, I want to stay with this other boy and this, that, and the next thing. And it was so upsetting to Prabhupada. When he got that letter, he said, I just feel like going back to Vrindavan and forgetting the whole thing. Wow. So I think we can safely say, at least internally, there were times when Prabhupada just looked at the prospect of spreading Krishna consciousness and what he had to deal with and how difficult it was. And not that he would do that, but there was a sentiment like it would just be easier not to do this. I was so happy in Vrindavan, I just love to go back and forget this. But he couldn't. His compassion wouldn't let him. But there were times like that where he felt that way. As we know, he used to go to the boat. When's the next boat going? It was difficult. He suffered. I don't know if you know this. When Prabhupada first came to America, before he was established at 26 Second Avenue, he either had written this in his diary or had told some devotees, and I was told this. He said that sometimes he couldn't sleep at night because he wasn't getting enough prasadam. And so he was hungry. Did you know that? Any of you know that? Raise your hand if you knew that. Yeah, not many of us knew that. Wow. That's amazing. So like, why stay? Why go through all this difficulty? Because it is said that a pure devotee is willing to take on suffering upon himself for the well-being of others. That is the nature of a pure devotee. So maybe we can get a little bit of that. That's what he wants us to do. Maybe we can feel a little bit of the pain of another living entity. And maybe we can give something out of that compassion. Maybe that can be, you know, when Prabhupada was showing us how to distribute his books, what the mood should be, he said, if people feel, we forgot to tell you it's $100 if your phone goes off, you can put the donation in the box. should have a little sign here to support the temple. Phone goes off during the lecture, $100. In some workshops, they do that. Yeah. That would be controversial, right? Wouldn't it? Yeah. So Prabhupada was saying, if people feel that you're their friend, so then they'll take the book because they feel that you care about them. So many people who met Prabhupada, if you ask them what stood out about Prabhupada, because this question was asked to many, their answers are recorded. One of the most common responses was what stood out was his compassion. Not only what he did, but how he looked at you, just his presence. Just by being in his presence, you can feel that. And so you could feel his affection, you could feel his concern. And so why do so many of his disciples want to give so much to him? Because they could feel his love. And so it was natural to reciprocate. So when anyone has compassion, other people feel it. And other people want to reciprocate with it. Can I serve you? Prabhupada had a little white attaché case. I don't know if you've ever seen it. And he would carry like donations he would get and his personal items in it. You know about that little? You ever seen pictures of it? So I was in the Los Angeles airport and Prabhupada was leaving. And I think it was Gopa Vrindapal or someone had the attaché case. And they said, would you like to carry it? So for me, you know, carry Prabhupada's attaché case, that was like, doesn't get any better than this, right? So Prabhupada has given us so much just to do any little thing, any little service for him. It's such a strong desire to be able to reciprocate with that. Prabhupada would sometimes, he was so compassionate that sometimes when he was ill, he would go to class because he didn't want to set a bad example of not going to class, so he would sit in class. During the Kumbh Mela festival, he was ill. So it wasn't good for him to take bath in the morning and so forth. It was very cold. The devotees were sleeping in, and he was concerned they were sleeping in, so even though he was ill, he got up early and took a cold bath as an example. So he was just willing to make unlimited sacrifice. Hare Krishna. Anyway, that's what I was inspired to say. Thank you for listening. And we have 10 minutes, so you can add your stories or realizations or questions, comments, controversies, disagreements. Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Should be a green light on.
Reading the book by Bhakti Bikash Swami about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, we were reading this section about how heavy he was with his disciples. He considered it his compassion that he would chastise them. And he went out of his way to chastise them every possible instance. So, of course, now most of us have a different impression of Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. If he had chastised us from the get-go, we probably would have left. But can you say something about that?
Yeah, he said, maybe you heard this, he said, after I go, those people I chastise will someday realize I'm their greatest friend. Something like that? Yeah. I was giving class the other day, and there were some pastimes in that confused a devotee because it didn't look like love. It looked like anger. And of course, we understand that someone who's pure cannot act out of any kind of material anger. It's all coming out of love, sometimes tough love. But the pure devotee would not chastise unless he knew it was for someone's benefit. It's the only reason he would do it. So, you know, I can do something nice for you, for your benefit. I can do something not nice, but it's for your benefit. It's from my perspective, I'm just doing the same thing, right? The parents, you know, they're only acting out of love. In the perfect parent, anyway, only acting out of love. That's hard for us. I think it's easier for Indians. I think Indian culture, you expect the guru, like that's what the guru does. He cuts you down to size, basically, isn't it? I've seen in India some very, very heavy lectures, and the guru is telling people, you know, you're all materialistic, you're all this and that, and you should, you know, stop being so stupid and be more, you know, take your spiritual life more seriously. Stop being so attached to material things. And not saying it as nicely as I'm saying it, but you know. Chastising. And after the lecture, the audience are like, thank you, we needed to hear that. That's traditionally, at least in India, what you'd expect from a guru. If you just get the lotus flower, not the thunderbolt. It's like, the lecture wasn't complete. Isn't it? Something like that. Like, I have a story. This was 1975. I had a problem, and the problem was lingering on, and I couldn't really overcome it. And once Sannyasi visited, we had a preaching center, and he came and visited, and I told him the problem. And he said two very heavy sentences to me, and the problem went away forever. Like, they were shocking. They were really heavy. But that's what I needed to hear. That problem that I couldn't cure, he could cure with two heavy statements. So sometimes it's like that, isn't it? Well, you have to know the problem. Basically, that a person was a nonsense and don't worry about it. Okay, yes.
Yes. So sometimes they give an example of when you're on a plane, you have to save yourself if something happened before you save others.
Yes.
Would you say that this is compassion?
Yes. Compassion has to include self-compassion. Because if you're only giving, you will give yourself out, unless you're, of course, very advanced. So self-compassion, I give myself, I'm kind to myself, merciful to myself, I give myself Krishna consciousness. And when that Krishna consciousness is overflowing, I naturally give it to others. No. Not if he's saying, is it selfish? Let's say I'm working hard to make money, is it selfish? Well, we have to see what I'm going to do with the money. So what I'm going to do with it determines if it's selfish. Yeah, I'm building a mansion, it's selfish. I'm building a project to help people. So everything that we do to nourish our spiritual life is self-compassion. And our compassion for others, it overflows because of our happiness. And by giving ourselves Krishna consciousness, we want to give it to others. And if we starve ourselves, okay, I'll tell you a story. It's pretty funny. You won't believe it's true, but it is. I'm in front of the deities, so I have to. So, in the more fanatical days of the Hare Krishna movement, we would sometimes think we should completely sacrifice everything, you know, sacrifice our mental well-being, our physical well-being, you know, just sacrifice for others. It's a good sentiment, but it can be overused and misapplied in a way that we suffer. So there's one sannyasi in that mood. It was kind of a time of our movement where we were very much into sacrifice. In that mood said, You should sacrifice yourself to spread Krishna consciousness, even if you have to fall into Maya to do it. And I was like, what? Did you say that? And he did say that. And he did do that also. He definitely followed his own instruction. He sacrificed himself on the altar of spreading Krishna consciousness and fell away from Krishna consciousness. So I think it would have been better if he sacrificed, left, and stayed, because he could have done a lot more. Don't you think? There were many, many devotees who made great sacrifices, and they burnt themselves out. Have you seen that before? Have you ever seen someone surrender themselves right out of bhakti? Have you seen that? It's so surrender. I've given so much, I didn't give enough to myself. So yeah, I've seen that many times. In fact, we have many leaders of our movement who did that, and I wish they hadn't done it. Yes?
I was thinking, even on the this is just one thing, but even on the plane, they tell you to put your own mask on first, yes, and then help the other people. But another comment about Prabhupada that was so prominent was his humility. You know, in spite of everything he was doing, he always had such a humble attitude. It was so attractive that somebody, because usually if someone's very great, they're very unapproachable, and but Prabhupada was so available to everyone. Like sometimes there'd be 300 people in the room and Prabhupada would come in, give a lecture, and every person felt like Prabhupada was speaking right to them, directly to them. Anyway, I just always felt overwhelmed that he would even sometimes speak to us and say, and thank us, and start to cry, you know? Yeah. Thank you so much, my boys and girls, for helping me. And there was nothing artificial about it.
Yeah.
And he was so devoted to his own guru that, you know, that the sacrifice he made, he didn't feel like it was a sacrifice, because he was doing it out of love for his guru. And it was the same for ourselves, is that it didn't feel so much like a sacrifice. What we were able to do, we just did it because we loved Prabhupada.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes. Pran Govinda.
So you have mentioned compassion means when one cannot tolerate the other's suffering. But then we see in Jarabharat's case, there's a fine line between compassion in relation to attachment, self-attachment, and affection for others. Because Prabhupada writes, at least twice he mentioned in that chapter, before you become compassionate to others, first you become compassionate to yourself. Because Jarabharat, this is the biggest mistake he did, that he gave up his practice in order to save the deer.
Yeah.
So I want to hear from you, what is the balance?
You said it all. Save yourself first. Prabhupada said the highest realization is to help others. But higher than that is to save yourself first. And then he said, if you don't know how to swim, how are you going to save anybody? So you learn to swim. So I would say that every instruction that Prabhupada gave us was an instruction to save ourselves. Like, to, you know, that's what he came to do, save us. And then you're in a position where you can save others. What Pran Govinda was saying, I don't know if you're aware of this, but when the attachment Jad Bharat had for the deer, it wasn't solely that was just an attachment and he thought of a deer, but that attachment caused him to give up his sadhana or reduce it. And that's where he had the problem. So that's interesting. Because we just look at the story and it's like, oh, he became attached to a deer. No, the attachment caused this effect. He gave up the sadhana. So sadhana is selfish, quote unquote. But everything a devotee does for themselves, they want to give, turn it around and give to others. So I was just reading, and Prabhupada said, our temples are places where you come, where you will be prepared to go back to Godhead. We will prepare you to take you back to Godhead. So you come here, you work on yourself, you prepare yourself for going back to Godhead, and then you take as many people with you as possible. I have a t-shirt, or if I don't, I'll make it. It says, don't go back to Godhead alone. So that's the idea. That your duty to your spiritual master is to perfect your life so that you go back to Godhead, but don't go alone. So, but how are you going to take anybody unless you're going? Obviously, right? And one of the most effective ways to change someone's heart is to change your own. Because people will feel what's going on in your heart and they'll be affected by it. And this is scientifically proven, that what is going on in my brain and my heart, if you get close enough to me, like within 10 feet, that'll start going on in your brain and heart, and vice versa. Isn't that interesting? So we had Prabhupada's association, and we can verify this reality that different things were going on in our minds and our hearts in his presence, like amazing things, like the way he was thinking, we were thinking, isn't it? Otherwise, how could we do what we did? So, as you evolve in Krishna consciousness, what you're feeling and thinking, the people around you are going to feel and think also. So the more you nurture yourself, you naturally nurture others. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Radhe Shyam ki jai, Gopremanandi, Hari Hari Bol.
Mahatma Prabhu ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai.